my guest for this entire hour, Candace Jordan, the hardest working woman in journalism, to my mind. She's so self-effaced, she laughs at stuff like that.
Well,
she was talking about when she started her blog 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's now celebrating its 15th anniversary.
It feels like 50th, though.
I'm sure it does in many ways. I'm sure it does. The longest running lifestyle blog.
In Chicago. Yeah, first and longest running.
You started it in as a means to tell your mom what you were up to.
Right, exactly. You know, I'm an only child. And
from a very small
DuPont, Illinois. It's a small town in southern Illinois, right across the river from St. Louis. It's a railroad town. And like I said, my mother and I were like sisters as much as mother and daughter. And so when I moved to Chicago, I started writing things because I wanted her to feel like she was here going to these parties with me, you know, so I would be extremely descriptive. So it would make her feel like she was at the party with me. And that's quite frankly the way I write now.
How did the blog launch?
Well, you know, a friend of mine.
As opposed to sending postcards.
Well, I'll tell you exactly how it started. I was working for Today's Chicago Woman.
Mm.
And this is when I started hearing about a blog, what's a blog? I didn't even know what a blog was. But a girlfriend of mine, Rhonda Sanderson, has her own PR agency. And she said, you know, if you want to do this, I can help you, because she had this staff and, you know, had technology, you know, things that I had no idea about. So she helped me with my first blog, designed it. You know, she had her staff help, you know, with the banner and stuff. And it started from there. That's how I did it. And I just left Today's Chicago Woman, and I, you know, just kind of leaped into the flames with this blog. And it was really popular from the get-go.
And you came to the Tribune.
And then I came to the Tribune after that. And you know how the Tribune found me was through my blog. And writing for Chicago Now, because I was the only person covering social events in the city at the time.
You know, you and I are of an age when there were columnists at papers who did cover this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
The Aaron Gold
Tribune, right.
And the Ink column at the Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
Irv Kupp's in it for half a century at the Sun-Times.
Right.
Did they inspire you?
Oh, absolutely. I would never miss a column on, you know, social news. I mean, that's kind of in my DNA.
You know, they called those things. It was so funny. They would refer to them generically as gossip columns, and I never thought of them.
And they called it society columns, and I thought that was way overreaching. I you know, that was too elitist for me. And I have people say, oh, you're a society column. I said, absolutely not. I'm just, I am an arbiter of what's happening in the city, you know.
But also, if you knew Kupp in those days, there was, to my mind, very few harder working journalists in Chicago than Irv Kupson and Aaron Gold at the time.
I agree 100%, and I loved them both, and I loved their columns. I loved, you know, all the tips that they would get that, you know, that you'd never read or see anywhere else.
Yeah, this is, ladies and gentlemen, this is before Twitter, this is before the internet. This is when you had to use shoe leather to go out and get stories.
Exactly. Had to scrabble for
and
it.
Sit in booth one with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, and that's where you would get your news. You must have, when you first came to Chicago, take me back to those days, Candace.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, you know, I first started at the St. Louis Playboy Club.
Mm-hmm.
I had a scholarship to St. Louis University, but I was tired of school. So at the time, they were hiring at this new club in St. Louis, and my girlfriend said, you should go over and try out for them.
What'd your mother say?
Anything that I wanted to do, my father too, I mean, they'd been divorced since I was two, and my dad was he was 10 years older than my mother. They never once questioned my judgment. And sometimes I wonder if that was such a wise idea.
Those are the kind of parents everybody needs.
But they were always so supportive. I'll give you a funny story. As a matter of fact, after I did the centerfold, one of the television stations in St. Louis came to my house to interview my dad and my mother together. And so they'd been divorced for a long time. And they asked my dad, you know, what do you think about your daughter doing the centerfold? And he said, if they'd have paid me what they paid her, I would have done it. So they were 100% behind me. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's good, because you probably needed that kind of support, because I know a lot of young women at the time who toyed with that with that career, whose parents did not support
them. Oh, absolutely
them.
Not. I mean, no. No, it was it was different times then. You know, you didn't have naked women every aspect of the internet, and you know, you could pick up your phone and find information.
Did you enjoy working at the club?
I loved everything about
Playboy.
Were
you good at the bunny dip? Of course you were.
Well, you know, I went through the training, which was really hardcore training.
I know.
I mean, this is not just waitress stuff.
Oh my God, no.
No, and you know, I was I did not enjoy serving any kind of food or alcohol. So I was always at the door, you know, welcoming people to the club.
Oh, you were kind of the greeter.
Yeah, I was the greeter.
The maitre d'.
Yes, and I worked as a bumper pool bunny and made a fortune.
As a bumper pool bunny,
yes.
Were you there to play against?
Yeah, to play the customers.
Were you
I could
good?
Do behind my back. I could jump the bumpers. I'm telling you, I could have had a career at that.
And you made, I mean, one of the things about not to be sexist at all, but in the day, being a Playboy bunny was beat the careers, many of the careers that were available to women, you know, be a secretary.
100%.
And you could make seriously good money.
Yeah. A lot of those girls put themselves through college. They became lawyers. I mean, you know, a variety of different professions. But it did give you, you know, the means to support yourself in whatever way you saw fit. And it was really a very well-paying job. Hours were, you know, you could basically choose your own hours.
Were you living alone in St. Louis at the time, or you're commuting to your mom's house?
No, I was I was living at my mother's house and working at the club.
That's the ideal thing.
Yeah.
my daughter's a Playboy bunny. We have to take a little break. We'll be back, but Candace will be here for the entire hour, so stay tuned. Candace Jordan and I were just talking about the Sugar Shack, that bastion of nude male dancing in just outside of Lake Geneva. Yeah. Candace was talking about her start as a Playboy bunny and the bumper pool queen of St. Louis. What brought you to Chicago?
Well, Playboy brought me to Chicago. They did a feature in the magazine called Best Bunnies, and David Chan, a photographer you might remember, had come to St. Louis, and he'd asked me if I would appear in the feature, and I said of course, and so I posed for the feature. And after it came out in the magazine, I got a call from Playboy in Chicago asking if I'd be interested in transferring here. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say yes fast enough.
Yeah. Had you been to Chicago at that point?
No,
never.
No. It was like the Emerald City when I drove here.
Oh my God.
And then you drove up to the Playboy Mansion, of course, and with the liveried butler answers the door. I thought, well, I can really get used to this.
This is Chicago.
This is going to work
that's
for me.
Some introduction to Chicago.
That's right.
And you worked at the Playboy Club on Walton.
Yeah, worked at the Playboy Club and lived at the mansion when Hefner was in residence.
Yeah.
You know, and they had all the wild parties. Fabulous. You know,
how many at the time you lived there, how many other bunnies were
I would say
there
was probably about 12 or 13 girls
in
there.
In a sense, it was, and people forget this. It was kind of like a dormitory.
Oh, it was a dormitory,
yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you had, you know, bunk
or
beds.
Or a sorority,
sorority.
Yeah.
And, you know, but everybody, you know, was in the living room, and, you know, we all ate dinner together from time to time, or we were in the pool together, or we were throwing water balloons off the roof at people on the sidewalk. I mean, it was really, it was what I would imagine college would have been like.
Yeah, if you had gone to college.
If I had gone, yes.
Well, I didn't either, so we've got that in common. And it was joyful. It was, you were certainly making a decent income at that club.
Yeah.
Remind people what that club was like. It was just west of Michigan
Avenue.
Yeah,
it was on Walton.
On the north side of Walton.
It was fabulous. It was two levels. They had a living room, they called it. And then they had, you know, a lunch area. Then they had a VIP room upstairs where a lot of the superstars.
Big shot, sure.
They got great talent there.
And they had great performers in there, too.
Incredible on the circuit.
Yeah.
It was really, I mean, a lot of
And one other thing about Hefner and the Playboy Club is it was one of the first interracial entertainment venues at it and Mr. Kelly's
100%,
to some extent.
Right.
That broke the color barrier.
100%.
Entertainers.
Yeah. No, he was an incredible human being. And I'm telling you, to this day, I am so ever grateful to him for a life. I mean, he brought me to Chicago.
Sure.
I wouldn't have met my husband. I wouldn't have, you know, known you.
Wouldn't know me. You wouldn't know Krista and Brad and Julian. You wouldn't know any of
my life would have been empty.
You posed for the magazine during those years.
Yeah. Well,
too.
You know, here's one of the perks of being a door bunny, you know, and greeting people. All the art directors, the first person they saw when they came to the club.
They're having drinks after work.
Yes,
they're walking across the street.
You know, and they would say, or a photographer would say, oh, by the way, Candace, we're doing this test cover. Can you come up and shoot the test cover? And so we can test lighting or whatever. So I've got 9 covers out of that and a centerfold.
Wow.
You know, so they happen to like me in the photography department.
You're an incredibly likable person. You must, you must know that.
And good days, bad days.
There's a sense of authenticity about you, Candace Jordan, that I think
you.
Is part of the reason you've been so successful. When did the Playboy years stop and why? And they didn't really stop because many, many years later, I went to a photo shoot where they were redoing some of the
classic. Yes, you were at the remake.
Yes, I was. Yes.
In 2017, 30 years after my centerfold, they asked seven girls to recreate their iconic covers. Mm-hmm. And mine was a February 79 cover. And we shot it here in Chicago. They wanted to fly me to L.A., but I didn't have... I had commitments that I couldn't make it. But thankfully, because that made you able to be there.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah, and you covered it, which was so kind of you. But yeah, no, and you know, and not and long after that, they asked me to be an ambassador for the magazine. I did some advertising for them for some products that they were promoting. And, you know, I'm still in touch with all of those people.
I know you are.
And I love them. And I just, I love my the longevity that I have with the magazine. And now, of course, the digital platform.
Talk to me about Hefner. I mean, Hefner was always seen, I think, by people who didn't know him as a kind of mysterious kind of figure. But he also, to my mind, was a genius.
He was an absolute genius. And, you know, I tell people this all the time. I said that his legacy is yet to be told in its entirety. I mean, because the things that he did, you know, the things that he did for people that nobody knew about. I mean, he was a huge philanthropist, but you never read anything about what the things that he did.
And a huge fighter for the First Amendment, too.
A huge fighter for the First Amendment. But besides that, here's the thing that always impressed me the most. And I only know this because I have friends inside the mansion that would tell me these things. That, you know, some of the girls would fall on hard times. You know, they'd be in financial straits and a loved one would die. They couldn't bury, you know, their relative or whatever. He would quietly slip them checks for $10,000, $15,000, Nobody ever knew about that. And he never told a soul. This is somebody inside the mansion that knew about this and told me.
One of the things is the image overwhelmed all the good works and the image overwhelmed all the incredible writers he hired to write for the magazine, incredible artists he had, and Art Paul and the design of that thing. When these movies and these weird, you know, post-death documentaries came out where there were some women that just made, to my mind, really wild, outrageous claims that of things that would have been known had they really been going on. To sully his image, you really were upset by that.
I'm till this minute, I'm upset by it. Even you saying that makes my blood boil. But I'll tell you something that's so funny, because all of these girls were madly in love with him. And they didn't get what they wanted out of the relationship. One of them wanted to have a baby with him. He did not want to. One of them wanted to marry him. He did not want to. And so they're all have bitter pills that they had to swallow. And it's very convenient for, you know, a decade later, they can bring out these allegations. Of course, he's not here to defend himself,
right,
is he?
Right.
And so and they're looking for another 15 minutes of fame, just another way to suck 10 more dollars out of him. And it just absolutely infuriates me.
It infuriated me, too. And I'm sure it infuriated Christy Hefner, who still lives here and has had a remarkable life, because she's a good person, and it could not have been easy being the daughter.
No, and for Cooper and his brother too, the same thing. I mean, you know, they've created different new lives for themselves, and I'm sure they've moved on and put it behind them. But you know, something like that is just so insidious. No, and I knew these girls. I knew some of these girls.
I bet you did.
I mean, I knew when I went out to the mansion, Holly was there to greet us at the door, was so proud to show us around and show us the, you know, the little bunny dorms that there was in the back, and that she had hand painted these stencils and all this. I never heard any criticisms or critiques then when I was going out there.
There was something very,
very, very bitter and strange. Yes,
about
vulturous
that.
Is a good
Do
word.
You still have any connection with Playboy? I know you were in touch with some of the people there. And
yeah.
What do you do now?
Well, they contact me from time to time. They just put a photo on their Instagram page of me from a beer campaign I did for them. And, you know, so they remember me, and I love and remember them. And, you know, I'm ready if they called me for another layout.
And what would your husband Chuck say about that?
That might be another story.
Right, before we break, and now after the second half hour is all going to be about what you do now. How did you meet your husband Chuck? How long have you been married? Chuck is a wonderful guy.
He is
a charming guy, and without him, you couldn't do what you do, could you?
I wouldn't be here without him. I couldn't do anything without him. I'm telling you, I don't know how I got so lucky. I mean, I met him in a bar.
Which one?
It was, what was the one where they had sawdust on the floor?
There were a lot of them.
No, you know, the one where the waiters, it was on Walton.
Was it in the basement?
No, no. Oh, my God. The waiters had white aprons. Oh, it's a very famous place. I can't believe I can't remember it.
Well, it'll come to us.
Anyway, so I met him there. A friend of mine said to me, because I was always out at night, I was a night owl, and he says, you know, Candace, you might meet a nicer class of people if you get up in the afternoon.
Yeah, if you woke up before midnight.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I set the alarm for noon, and we went to lunch, and we went to this place that I can't remember. And so there were guys that were sitting at the table, and there was like three guys there. Whitey Pearson was one of them.
Wow.
You remember Terry Whitey. That was a dear friend of Chuck's. And so he introduced me to these guys, and I'm not sure Chuck was the intended target for he wanted to introduce me to. I think it was somebody else, but I did give Chuck my card, and you know, and he called, and kind of the rest after that is history. We got married within 6 months of meeting each other.
That's great. And you have
33 years later.
You have such a good marriage. If you see Candace out at one of the many, 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 many openings and events that she goes to, Chuck is the loyal companion.
He sure is. I could not do it without him. You're absolutely right.
He likes this.
Now he does. At first, you know, in his defense, he didn't know anybody. And I was the one that knew all the people.
Sure.
So now that he's been to so many of these, now he can chit-chat when I'm doing whatever I have to do. And so now he feels like he's got his own little social life and his own little clique.
Don't tell me he's going to start.
He's on Instagram, you know.
Oh, no. No. Now he's going to tell me he's starting a blog, too, Chuck. Don't do it. It's too much. It's too much work. When we come back after the news, I will talk to Candace more about not only the 15th anniversary of her blog. It's candidcandace.com. Isn't that easy, ladies and gentlemen? Also, the third anniversary of Chicago Star, which is a fascinating publication because it is all about good news.
Good news.
It is a good news publication. Mm-hmm. The place where Candace Jordan and Chuck Jordan met was the Palm. The Palm.
Yeah, I could remember.
I'm assuming that text came from Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck remembered.
Yes, Chuck remembered. Well, he doesn't have a blog yet, so he has time. He has time to remember. So you started the blog at Today Chicago Woman, and then you came to the Tribune.
Yeah. Yeah, then I came to the Tribune, and you know, I started first at Chicago Now when they had that fabulous blogging platform. They had like 300. That's another story. I'm so upset over that they yanked that thing, and all those people lost all their work. That was horrifying.
Horrible.
But that's another story. But anyway, so yes, I was at Chicago Now, and I was writing a social column, you know, in
the
where I'd been and doing all that kind of stuff. And so at the time, they were looking for a social columnist at the Tribune.
Yeah.
So I went in, and I had an interview. There was like eight people in the room. It was the most intimidating experience of my entire life.
No, meeting any eight people from the Tribune
And they were all sitting like against the wall in these chairs. It was like it was really scary. Mm-hmm. Joyce Winicky was one of the, actually she's who hired me, and Colin McMahon was there, and Margaret, the lawyer,
Margaret Holt.
Yes. So all those people were there. But, you know, fortunately they liked me and they hired me. And so I had like almost 10 years at the Tribune with my column.
You did a great job.
Thank you,
too.
Rick.
Then the magazine folded. And there were a lot of, we could sit here for the next 8 hours and talk about people who no longer work for
the Tribune. Yeah, that's for sure.
And how did you transition out of that?
Well, let's see.
You kept the blog alive.
Oh, yeah. I kept the blog alive. And, you know, it happened during COVID. Obviously, you know, there's no social events to cover when COVID hit.
Exactly.
And so, and I didn't blame them for, you know, because I was on for like still 3 months, you know, Candace will be back next week. Candace will be back, which obviously never happened. So, I kept my blog going. And, you know, I was happy to be doing it. And, you know, I just ramped up and paid more attention to it. And, you know, I had more time to get it out on a more timely manner.
One of you is being a loyal reader of your stuff in the Tribune and from the early days, there was a real, it was not a focus so much. I mean, you could easily do a focus on the frivolous nature of entertainment and society and nightlife in this city. It would be easy to do. Oh, there's a new drink at Lux Bar, and there's a new this here, and a new... You really seem to focus, to my mind, on charitable endeavors.
Yeah, exactly. All nonprofits. Because that's where the heart of the community is. You know, if without the nonprofits, you know, the city wouldn't survive because they take care of people nobody else wants to take care of. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways. And so, you know, and I didn't just cover the big events and nonprofits and charities.
Oh, I
covered things that, you know, nobody had ever heard about before.
Yeah.
You know, and because I never wanted to make a distinction. I mean, they are all important in their own ways. And so, you know, I think that's kind of what made it kind of sort of my column unique, is because it was, you never knew what to expect.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so,
exactly.
And you know, it didn't matter if you were a big high profile person, if you were a low profile person but still had something that was interesting in a story and some kind of a nonprofit that you were a part of, then I shared that too.
What do you think generally about the Chicago social scene and how, you and I have been around long enough to know, it used to be very much an old money kind of scene here.
Yeah.
Very much an old money kind of scene. And
right.
And then that was kind of shattered. There's still a lot of old money out there, but there's also a lot of new money. A
lot
out there
of new
too.
Money. And you know what? It's really good now because I think it's way more diverse. And I think it makes it more interesting. I mean, you know, you can meet people high, low, in the middle. And, you know, if everybody's got a story to tell and everybody's got something that's fascinating. And so, you know, you're out there, you never know who you're going to meet. And it's, I think it's better now. I like it. I'm having more fun.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel you are in many ways a part of the scene that you cover? Does that create any kind of awkward moments for you, Candace?
Absolutely not. No. You know, and as a matter of fact, the Tribune used to put a disclaimer on the ends of my column.
Yes, they did.
They said that, you know, Candace covers a lot of events, some of which she's a part of.
Which she's involved with.
She's involved with, which I thought was terrific.
Yeah, there's no
because problem. Here's how I argued this, because there was a question about that when I was first interviewed. And I said, listen, I said, you want to get it from an insider's point of view?
Yeah.
Or do you want to just have somebody, you know, that doesn't know a thing about these organizations writing about them? And I had an insider's viewpoint.
Are people desperate to get in your column?
Oh, well, I don't know. I've had some people make some lovely comments, but I hope so. I hope everybody wants to be in my column. Just write me. I'll put you in.
So then, roughly 3 years ago, you transitioned from doing it in that small space. You were doing it without a real home.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? I wouldn't call it a small space. It's never been a small space.
No, I'm not talking about the space itself of the column. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the niche.
Oh, definitely the niche.
Publication.
Yes,
niche.
Yes, yes, yes. No, you're absolutely right. So, I was writing my blog, and a person I didn't know reached out to me and said, you know, Candace, Chicago Star would love to talk to you. And I didn't know what Chicago Star was.
Had it started already?
Well, it was in newsletters. It was kind of like a small thing in newsletters in some of the buildings around River East and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and I thought it had a lot of potential. I thought, wow, this is something that maybe I can help build from the ground up with, you know, the people involved. And so, you know, sure enough, we created, changed the name to Chicago Star.
What's the name
before
of that
it
nice
was New East Side
What's the name
News.
Of that nice woman who runs it?
Elaine
thing?
Hyde. It was her. And she started it in River East because she was new to Chicago.
She lived there.
Yeah, and she didn't know about where to go. And so she thought, well, if I write a newsletter about where to go, then, you know, I'm answering my own questions, which was genius. And so it's built up from there, and now we're celebrating, like you said, our third birthday, and it's doing really well. We've switched from a print platform, as a lot of people have, to a digital platform.
It's almost everybody is going to eventually.
Yeah, but, you know, surprisingly, we have expanded our reach like three times. It's three times bigger than it was with the print.
I'm a subscriber.
Good. Well, you know, there is a new subscriber email. $27 a month, a year, which is like $2 a month.
Yeah.
And you get really exclusive content that you're not going to find anywhere else.
Really?
Yes.
There's no print publication at all.
No, but there might be one for a nonprofit in November.
For
we
nonprofit.
Might bring it back for something, a special edition. Yeah.
So who's your audience?
I think everybody in Chicago is our audience.
Well, of course you do. Yeah, of course you
do. You know, and who doesn't want to read good news? I mean, it's like we don't, like you said, we don't cover any crime. We don't cover politics. We don't cover like COVID.
Well, Skyline. Skyline's not a competitor. I don't think there is.
Well, they have a police blotter.
They
we don't do that. You
they
know,
do
we
indeed.
We try to be. And I don't want to say that's Holly go lightly, but we really do want to keep a positive slant on absolutely everything we put in on the digital platform.
Does it sometimes get difficult? In light of, let's say, here we are Sunday, Last night, there was all sorts of trouble in the heart of the loop. Good Lord. People tried to break into the Art Institute, for Christ's sake. And two nights ago, there was all sorts of horrifying trouble at 31st Street, 31st Street Beach. Is there any sense that when you talk to your colleagues at the place that you have to dip into this?
Well, you know, if like we covered Brandon Johnson when he got elected, I mean, that's politics, you know, but, you know, every other paper covers that. I mean, you're going to see that on the front page of the Tribune. You'll see it at the front page of the Sun-Times. You won't see it on the front page of our platform.
Good point.
I mean, it's everywhere else. We don't need to do that. We want to be something different.
How often does the platform change? I mean,
all the time, daily, multiple times a day.
You're updating
it. There's constant content. I mean, if you go to ChicagoStarMedia.com, you're going to see things that I don't think you're going to see in other places.
There's no question about that, especially your work.
Thank you.
What does it cost to subscribe for an entire year?
It's just a subscriber. No, the platform is free. You can go to our website and see all of our content. But if you want to get specialized, you know, things that, I mean, we have really a very unique subscriber email. And like I said, it's $3 a month or $2 a month, really.
Yeah, right.
And so we save back some of our content and put it just in the subscriber email.
That's smart. How many subscribers do you have?
Not enough. We need more. We want you to subscribe.
Don't I? I do. I'm sure I do. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I'll quiz you. I'm going to ask you some questions. It's only in the subscriber email.
It's a quiz. We have one more break, and then I'm going to keep Candace till the top of the hour. I'm sitting here talking to Candace Jordan that you can find at
CandidCandace.com,
ChicagoStarMedia.com. You can find Candace Jordan at ChicagoStarMedia.com, at CandidCandace.com, and you can now find her, ladies and gentlemen, at CandidCandaceJordan.podbean.com. You have entered the increasingly busy podcast world.
Well, you know, Rick, this is how I figured it. Everyone on the planet has a podcast.
I don't.
You've got this. WG. You've got your own little platform.
Yes, it's like a radio show.
Yeah, you're the real deal. I'm just a little podcaster.
No. There are a lot of great podcasts out there. I've listened to the first one, which you begin by saying, you're right. Welcome to the inaugural Candid Candace, the podcast. In this first edition, I share a hopeful vision of Chicago as one of its biggest cheerleaders with news of event news, nonprofit record breakers, and where to go next. I chat with civic leader philanthropist John Roback, who gives some great advice on giving back, as well as the beloved founder of the Chicago Randolph Street Market, Sally Schwartz. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this front row seat to what's happening in the Windy City. I thought the first one was terrific.
Well, you know, thank you so much. Rick, here's the problem I have with it. I mean, this is a lot more work than I anticipated. I mean, look at the notes I've got. I've got enough here, for a Bible.
Yeah, she really did. Yeah.
And it's the same for a podcast. I mean, you really do have to be uber prepared, as you are being the ultimate professional and my idol are always. And so I did not realize how hard it was. And the second thing I realized is that I absolutely despise the sound of my own voice.
That's what everybody says.
Oh, everybody says that?
Everybody. Krista Flores can attest to that.
Oh.
Everybody who hears himself on radio for the first or second time goes, oh, my God, I sound terrible.
I sound like a 100-year-old woman who was a heavy smoker. And here's the thing, you know, the intro.
100-year-old women who are heavy smokers don't live to be 100, I'll tell you that.
Well, let me tell you something.
Yes.
You know, John St. Augustine, who you know, former WGN host, he is the producer and he's a co-host. He helps me out as co-hosting from time to time. And that magnificent Jennifer Weigel does an incredible opening. And so it slides in from her dulcet tones to this voice.
Oh, stop.
And it's like, you put the screech, you got to put the brakes on.
I am assuming it is going to be in its way, Candace Jordan, an oral version of your blog and your column.
Yeah.
And you're going to, I am assuming also that you're going to have lengthy, you don't do in your column and your blog, lengthy interviews.
No, I don't.
This gives you a new space which to do that.
You're absolutely right. And I'm really kind of loving this because I've got so many people I want to talk to, you being one of them. I want to have you on. And this,
replay this thing. What are you talking about?
Well, that would be easy, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
I'm sure WGA wouldn't mind that. But in the second podcast, I interviewed a really good friend of mine who's a fellow Playboy Playmate, Kathy St. George. She was August 1982. And I'm telling you, she was one of the girls who had her her cover redone in 2017.
Sure.
And we've spent time together in West Palm Beach. You know, she lives there now. And I mean, we've had a lot of fabulous memories together. She feels like about Hefner like I do. And in this second podcast, she shares a secret that Sinatra told her about a very famous person that would be shocking.
Who's the famous person?
You don't have to tell Angie us. Dickinson.
Well, it can't be that Frank Sinatra slept with Angie Dickinson.
No, you got to listen to the podcast.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. There you go. You want to know the secret Frank Sinatra shared about Angie Dickinson, who is still alive, by the way.
Yeah, I know. You know, I did a GlamourCon.
Is that the secret?
No. Years ago, they have this Playboy pinup convention that they used to have around Chicago, and I would from time to time go and sign autographs. And the last time I went, she was at the booth next to me. She was in her 80s, and she looked adorable.
Was she nice?
She was so nice. Chuck was thrilled to meet her. I mean, it was a fabulous moment. She's precious.
You can find out, ladies. When do these? The first one. What do they break? How do you even describe premiere? Where do you find?
Oh, well, on podbean.com.
Podbean.
And it's called Candid Candace, the podcast. And we're doing them like every 3 weeks or so, you know, and as the news accumulates, you know, then I'll have a lot of information and we'll kind of.
And it's going to be, I mean, it will be your reportage.
Yeah.
Your interviewing.
Yeah, it's a combination.
Probably what's coming up in Chicago.
100%, yes.
It'll be very interesting when you get to
all the event news, past and present.
The NASCAR time. I'm serious.
Yeah.
And, whatever you may cover the inaugural events of Brandon Johnson in May when he is inaugurated.
You never know where I'm going to be next.
As mayor. How do you keep your energy? You are really, you and Chuck are just extraordinarily busy.
Well, I've told you this before. You know, my mother and my dad, last two people ever to leave a party, had to get the hook to get them out, and I kind of follow in their footsteps. So, that's the way it is.
That is the way it is.
Yeah.
Candace, you're a force of nature. You can go, ladies and gentlemen, to CandidCandace.com. That indeed will give links to all the other things.
All the stuff, yes. And I'm everywhere, all over social media. But don't forget, I want to tell you the...
What's the Jimmy John story?
Okay, now this is a really good story, I got to tell you. So, you know, Jimmy John Lieto, who was the founder of Jimmy John Sandwich Shops across the country, his dad passed away not long ago, and he wanted to take a group of people to Gibson's Restaurant on Rush Street, as we all know and love, and he wanted to treat them to dinner in honor of his dad and as a tribute. And so he called ahead and asked Kathy Picone from Gibson's to put his dad's photo on the wall for this dinner so that people file in, tears all around. They see his picture. At the end of the dinner, he left a six-figure tip, $100,000 for
That's
the staff to split
story.
Because his dad had the best time and everybody always treated him so well there.
That is an amazing story, and that appeared on your blog.
Yes, it did.
Candace broke the news. She had first and exclusively. What are they going to do with it? Are they splitting that $100,000?
Yeah, they're going to split the tip between all the workers. I don't know how exactly, but I know it'll be split between the staff. Yep. I wish I worked there.
What?
Wish I worked there.
Yes, that's just, Candace, that's just what you need. It's another job.
Well, you never
that's
know.
It's another job. Please give Chuck a hug for me.
I will.
And thank you for coming in, and thank you for doing all you do. I need to see... Yeah, in a city that is screwed up in a lot of ways, what Candace does is highlight the things that are not screwed up.
Right back at you. I love you, Rick.
CandidCandace.com.
Thank you.